Down with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go, and it's Friday on the front porch, it's a minute past the hour, this is the horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home, folks gathering in the chat room even as we speak, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chatroom, one word. Pick out a screen name and a password and jump right into the conversation if you wish. Friday's on the front porch. Often have an air of, sometimes we get downright silly. I got a feeling this is not going to be one of those evenings. This is not going to be one of those Friday on the front porches. Not by a long shot. Sorry, adjusting the mic here. My bad. Bear with me, please. Yeah, that's better. I presume, if you're listening live, that you know what is going on right now. To wit, Paris is under attack. What we know so far is that there have been explosions, there's been an attack on a restaurant, and an attack on a music venue where a metal band. There have been reports that the attackers have yelled Allahu Akbar. Reports indicate as many as 60 people dead, 60 innocents, 60 civilians. France has closed her borders, which is an unusual, a highly unusual step. Because La Belle France has been committed to its essential motto, its operative philosophy, liberté, égalité, fraternité. And as a result of this, and everything I see says that indications are that the attacks are not over. At the concert hall, there are at least 8 hostages taken. Before I came to air, I heard one report say that outside the concert hall, all you can hear is gunfire, then screams, then more gunfire, and more screams. It has also been reported that AK-47s have been found, and in a form of sublime overstatement, or I don't know. Paris attackers reportedly used AK-47 automatic weapons. First thing I thought was, well, duh. That's because they want to use weapons that work. Very reliable, the Kalashnikov rifle. President Obama has announced that this is an attack on all of humanity. It's my understanding police are not going into the concert hall at the moment. And, well, this is what happens when you do this sort of thing. You have plans along one route, and everything changes in the last, at the bat of an eye. I was going to open the program by talking about some capitalism in space. But instead, well, we could pretend that there's other but this is going to dominate. This is going to dominate our attention. And the response to and it will dominate the news cycle for the foreseeable future. Naturally, some people wondering if there are also targets in the UK, Germany, the US. But it is also noteworthy that the at least one or two of the attacks were happening not too very far from the offices of Charlie Hebdo. Right? The 11th arrondissement being the one of the low key of the attacks. Early reports indicate that at least six shootings, and by shootings I think we mean six places where shootings took place, six shootings and three explosions. French President François Hollande was at the main Parisian athletic stadium watching a friendly match between France and Germany. He has been evacuated. And quite frankly, this is probably we'll discuss this evening on Friday on the Front Porch. Because there will, of course, be multiple angles. One presumes, and perhaps wrongly, but one presumes that if these are indeed radical Muslim extremists attacking, that they are probably somehow associated with Islamic State. And those are the facts of the attack. Like a stone thrown into a pond, however, there will be a ripple effect. And even though we are very, very far, and an ocean separates us from both the UK and the European mainland, well, part of the ugliness that will attend this will be, of course, the American right-wing response. And I imagine people, speech writers and policy monsters, for people like Mike Huckabee and God knows Trump and Mumblin' Ben and Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz. I mean, we got to... Yeah. Are busy screaming about building walls along our southern border. And, well, I mean, maybe the northern border, too, now. You know, some of those Canadians are French Canadians. And that's just going to be ugly. Randy in PA with a note saying, I get the France 24 channel in English on my antenna system, but I'm not about to tune in. I don't need a dosage of live disaster TV coverage. And that may be the most grown-up thing any of us could do, is not tune in to the disaster coverage. Marty points out, as Sherlock Holmes would say, it is hazardous to theorize in advance of the facts. Well, some of the stuff we do have are facts. And I don't think it's theorizing to posit what the right-wing response will be in the United States, because, frankly, that's not theory. That too, is factual. We know where they'll go on this. They are as predictable as the movement of the Earth around the sun yields up sunrise and sunset. There are reports that one man escaped the concert hall, put his date in a cab, and ordered it to go. He reports seeing the face of one killer, estimating the person to be no more than 25 years old, not speaking, just firing at random. He's getting text messages from friends hiding in a dark room. They, of course, are terrified. At least 20 people are reported to have been shot in the concert hall. The witness described it as a bloodbath. It's a little place with about a capacity for maybe 70. And so whatever is coming across the TV right now is almost undeniably blood porn. So what do you say about this? Well, there is some to be said about it. These attacks come as the United States announced today that it is, and this is a quote, reasonably certain that by using a drone, we have killed the person we have nicknamed Jihadi John, the guy who was on the videos hacking away at people's necks. British citizen. The Reuters story says U.S. and British officials welcomed the apparent success of the operation targeting Mohammed Emwazi, saying his death, if confirmed, would be a big blow to Islamic State's image and prestige, even though Emwazi was not a significant tactical or operational figure in the militant group. If this strike was successful, and we still await confirmation of that, it will be a strike at the heart of ISIL, British Prime Minister David Cameron said in a statement outside his official London residence. Reuters continues and reports that it took months to prepare and plan for the U.S.-British missile strike. Using sensational language, Reuters says that the attack came together at lightning speed shortly before midnight on Thursday as two U.S. MQ-9 Reaper, who names these things, drones and one British MQ-9 cruised above the Syrian town of Raqqa. Okay, sure. And so there is an argument to be made that whatever's happening in Paris is probably related to the ancient monotheistic notion, you know, God of Abraham, all of that, of an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Yeah, what a great idea. You kill some of ours, we'll kill some of yours. You'll kill some more of ours, we'll kill some more of yours. U.S. officials are announcing that they think the attacks were coordinated. Really? An anonymous source said, "This clearly looks like a coordinated series of attacks." You think? What are the odds of them being coincidental? Via email, and I seldom give out the email address anymore. That's a mistake on my part. BobKincaid@gmail.com, BobKincaid@gmail.com. For your thoughts or your calls, your participation. In the Horn Malloy Skype chat group in somewhat short order. Marty says, yeah, you're correct at what the right-wingers will say in a spasm, waiting to hear if any truthers are shouting false flag. Oh, no. I'm sure that Alex Jones is cranking up his false flag machine even as we speak. Maybe Mike Palasek can send out an email talking about how there's a book out now that shows that there weren't really any dead French people. The French government, meanwhile, is asking journalists not to give out blow-by-blow accounts because back in January with the attack on Charlie Hebdo, the murderers were being sent TV coverage, which was helping them to attempt to evade and flee les gendarmes. This, however, is not slowing down CNN in the least, because money. Meanwhile, if you go to Reuters.com, as I did, what you'll find if you try to click on the live coverage video link, all it says now is further live coverage expected. In some ways, this is, and I mean no disrespect, this is just another day on Earth. Another day among the homicidal primates who danced joyfully with a thigh bone in their hand around the big obelisk. And I don't mean that to sound as cynical as it probably does, but now, I wasn't trying to indicate that this was in direct retaliation for what happened overnight with so-called Jihadi John. These things do take time to plan. Marty asking, you know, if this was in reaction to the drone attack, then why Paris, why not London or somewhere more American? In terrorism and what the American military likes to refer to as asymmetrical warfare, you're more likely to take targets of opportunity than targets of strategic value. There's no goddamn strategic value in a little club in Paris where 70 people went to hear probably a terrible metal band. Robert in Morgantown letting me know. Drudge already calling it a Muslim rampage. Well, of course he is. Most European capitals, especially in the north of Europe, are on high alert at this moment. It is, if I've got this correct, what is it, 20 after midnight in Western Europe right now? After 11 in the UK. And perhaps that's part of the discussion we need to have, the nature of this asymmetrical warfare, where we attack your civilians, so you attack ours. Because, again, there were no, I will hazard the guess, that there were probably no military targets in that music venue. Maybe there were police around the soccer stadium. Under the subject line, U.S. right-wing response, Bruce from PA, currently near Lyon, France, well, says the easy answer, the U.S. right-wing response, the easy answer, the French need to carry guns. Well, I agree, Bruce, but by the same token, what I expect to hear from the wing nuts of the mainstream Republican Party is, see, even France, sissy France, has closed their borders, because you got to do that now. It's a dangerous world. And is that what we're going to do? Are we going to hunker down and close all our borders and put people with guns all over the place? Doesn't feel very free, that, does it? In New York, Steve writes under the subject line, violence fatigue. While it is undeniable that this country is getting more violent by leaps and bounds, doesn't it seem violence is escalating worldwide? Have there ever been this many conflicts, wars, and other violence? Agreed, Steve. But. Because there's always a handful of those around. Ask yourself how many of these attacks were taking place prior to 2001. Yes, of course, the embassy attacks of the 1990s and the Clinton presidency, certainly. And the attempt on the World Trade Center, also in the 1990s, sure. Why did those happen? Anybody, show of hands, anybody remember how many people died in Iraq following Bush War I as a result of the no-fly zone enforced under the Clinton administration? Anybody? A million, most of them children. Yes. And then we have to also discuss Bush War I itself, which was entered into by the United States on the flimsiest tissue of lies. Yeah, remember the poor Kuwaiti babies in the incubator that didn't exist? Or how about the April Glaspie telex as an official policy position of the George H.W. Bush administration's stance, in which April Glaspie telexed to Saddam Hussein, old business partner of the United States, to whom we supplied things like weapons of mass destruction, you know, poison gas, things like that, that they used when they attacked the Iranians. Yeah, I remember all that, sure. What did April Glaspie say? Oh, yes, the U.S. takes no position on Arab versus Arab conflicts. Which, to a man like Saddam Hussein, was a green flag, saying, well, you know, if you go take Kuwait, we'll probably sell you some more guns. So worldwide violence is on the rise, but there, you know, there's always been some degree of violence in the world. The violence that we see on the rise now is a direct and proximate result. That's a highfalutin legal term, proximate. A direct and proximate result of March 2003. And the entire run-up to the Iraqi war. To a certain extent, it's also a function of our attack on the people of Afghanistan. Remember, that one was the right war to be in. Because the right war to be in is the war where you send drones over and hellfire missile the occasional wedding party. Isn't war awesome? Isn't war just cool? Out of the power vacuum. And we do remember what the George W. Bush administration did as soon as we had toppled Saddam's regime, right? We pink-slipped the entire Iraqi military. Not a good idea to take a bunch of people who have been getting pretty decent money for marching up and down the square wearing the local military costume and suddenly putting them out of work. Then, of course, we engineered the end of the secular state in Iraq. Another great idea. And created this little old power vacuum, which an ambitious group, not Al-Qaeda, calling themselves the Islamic State, and headed up by, lo and behold, one of those former out-of-work Iraqi officers, they stepped up to fill the void. And they are doing their fair share of violence. Right. And that's what's escalating the violence worldwide. The refugee, immigration, whatever you want to call it, crisis in Europe is a direct result of that. Remember, when we attacked Iraq, Iraq was a secular state that had, among other things, a small, if vibrant, Christian community. Well, those folks, at least the ones who didn't get all dead, because remember, as of around Halloween 2004, about a year and a half into our war against the people of Iraq, Johns Hopkins University announced that there had been 1 million excess statistical deaths in Iraq, thanks to Operation Iraqi Liberation, which was then changed when the geniuses in the Bush administration figured out that that spelled oil and was probably not a good optic. It was changed to Operation Iraqi Freedom, which is just oif! And then became the Global War on Terror. What? Yeah. As a result of that, we had about 1 million excess deaths, and that vibrant little Christian community. Goodbye now. You've only been there for 2,000 years. That's enough. Move along. Meanwhile, as Robert in Morgantown points out, closing borders is problematic. It amasses huge numbers of people in airports. Nothing like handing the bad guys. I'm sorry, this is Carol pointing it out. Nothing like handing the bad guys easy targets. Robert in Morgantown pointing out, yes, it is the first time France has closed the borders since World War II. And unless I'm mistaken, the people who closed the French borders then weren't necessarily French. And by the way, thanks go out this evening to Kelly's husband, Theo, for taking care of the penalty last night. There was no penalty. Incurred by our dear friend, the Angry Indian, for mentioning the little Austrian dude with the chaplain mustache. So thank you to Kelly's husband, Theo. Thanks, Theo. What I was going to say is, with the program and the topic with which we are having to deal with this evening on hand, it may be tough. See, I mean, just witness the previous remark. It may be tough to fulfill the Onay Itler Hay, and see, I didn't say it, challenge this evening. In the chat room, Lottie asking, we need to ask the bigger question, is France practice for the U.S.? You know, if they could get to us, sure. But, I don't know. And also, within the context of all of this murder porn, because remember, this is not war. These are murders, okay? And these are murderers. Even to call them terrorists, I think, is to afford them a level of importance they do not deserve. These are crooks. These are criminals. These are killers. These are murderers. And while I guess attacks is the right word, it connotes almost some sort of statist, to use a word, another word, it's sort of uncomfortable, a state versus state conflict. The only way that's the case is if one acknowledges that Daesh, Islamic State, what have you, is in fact a state-level actor instead of the miserable criminal enterprise that it is, brought to you in large part by our partners in peace, the good headloppers, the Saudis. When are we going to figure out that those people aren't our friends? Probably not as long as there's money involved, right? Yeah. Over via email, Robert in Australia with the subject line, just another day on Earth, says, I did something I haven't done in 10 years and looked at the broadcast TV channels. They all appear to be showing the same feed from France. The commercial morning chat TV are talking and talking while saying nothing. The Australian Broadcasting Corporation is just showing the feed. That's enough. I switched it off after a few minutes. Just feel depressed and sad. Like you said, it's just another day on Earth. Irish Dave with a question. But Bob, if them terrorists hate the French for their freedom, doesn't that imply that the French are free? Is there even such a thing as a French Wolverine? Well, obviously, you're right, because they're, you know, in France, you generally don't strap on a dirty, hairy hog leg to go walking down the rue to the local boulangerie. I still remember my high school French vocabulary, damn it. You don't do that. And, of course, just as ginning up a war was the ultimate goal of the attackers on September 11th, 2011, and they got, they got Dim Leader to take the bait like handing falafel to a baby. Well, so, too, that will be the question here. Will the French rise to the bait? Because, see, the goal, if there is to be a goal here, one might be tempted to think that it would be something like, you know, if y'all will just stop, just stop having anything to do with messing around in Middle Eastern affairs, or, you know, if you'll just shut down that awful, awful Charlie Hebdo, we'll leave you alone. After all, that was the modus operandi in regard to September 11th, 2001, wasn't it? Because, you know, we received correspondence in its aftermath that said, look, what we're aggrieved by is the fact that you have American military bases parked on sacred Saudi sand. And even though your partners in peace, the good headloppers, the royal house of Ibn Saud, invited you in, we find that to be a heretical violation of the goodness of our monotheist, our version of monotheistic religion. So George W. Bush, being the brave, brave man that he was, immediately said, yeah, well, you know what we're going to do? We've gotten a better deal elsewhere, and we're going to put it on somebody else's sand. That's not quite so sacred. And this they then did. Ron and Raleigh answering my question. We'll figure out that the Saudis aren't our friends about the same time we figure out that the Israelis aren't our staunch allies either. In other words, never. Marty noting, the good headloppers will stop being the good ones after they buy a bunch of A380s instead of B747-8s. Ray, under the subject line, don't lose your head, says, while I offer no excuse for butchers, if Western countries would just get the hell out of the Middle East where no one but the oil companies want them anyway, all these troubles would be over. And I am strongly tempted, well, it's hard not to agree. And that's kind of my default position, too, Ray. You know, the other night I was briefly touching upon, and Asa complimented me on the understanding of why it is that those aggrieved Confederate Lives Matter idiots out in Oklahoma really didn't have a leg to stand on, and were aggrieved by the fact that we have Muslim veterans of the United States Armed Forces. Well, another little thing to point out. Once upon a time, we had some troubles with a Muslim country. In the early days of this this failed experiment in Republican government, not like obnoxious political party, but Republican government, Republic-style government, in the administration of a guy who ostensibly should have been a peacenik, but upon becoming president, found out that there was a whole lot more to it than high-minded philosophizing. See, what we needed back in 1802 was a welder, not a philosopher. Damn it, Mr. Jefferson. Well, he was trying. I mean, he had his slaves out there making nails at a nail factory on the grounds of Monticello. It was the only thing that ever made him any money. Yeah, I know. But we had a little problem with an outfit we called the Barbary Pirates because they were interfering with, business, commercial shipping. And so the young fledgling Navy was tasked with the job of clearing them out. The USS Constitution, the USS America, frigates. They would go on to see action in the War of 1812 as well. But they were tasked with clearing out the Barbary Pirates, and we had made our peace with one group of people in the North African neck of the woods because we had the Treaty of Tripoli. Where is it? Yeah, I know. It's near Benghazi. But part of the problem we solved with the Treaty of Tripoli was to put at ease the particular fears
and they're real fears, and they've lived, there's sort of transgenerational, that one of these days somebody was going to gin up another good crusade, because that all worked so well for people who lived in Muslim countries. And so in the Treaty of Tripoli, negotiated before Jefferson by John Adams, I think, it says something like, "Oh, and by the way, the United States is in no wise founded upon the Christian religion." To which the other signatory said, "Oh, okay, cool." And there then flourished, after Jefferson got done with the Barbary pirates, who were pirates and not necessarily state actors, there flourished in this country an absolute fascination with Islam, among other things. Talented young grifter named Joseph Smith would bogart a whole bunch of Islam, going so far as to adopt for himself the title that had been afforded to Muhammad, to wit, the Seal of the Prophets, which means, you know, after me, I don't care. Nobody else gets to say anything after me. I've done all the prophesying there is to do. There will be no more prophets. Damn it. And on both sides of the Civil War, when the overly optimistic members of both armies, the American army and the traitor army, marched off to battle, some units were referred to as Zouaves. And they wore a North African Islamic style of dress uniform. You know that? Yeah. And of course, some time back we had the discussion about a little tiny town in Iowa called El Cader that was named after a person that we would think of now and refer to now and probably drone strike now as a terrorist, Muhammad Al-Qadr. Abraham Lincoln would write favorably of his yearnings for freedom for his people as he led a rebellion against, come on, the French colonialists. So our loathing of Islamic countries is actually a fairly recent vintage. Using the word vintage and extending that metaphor, it is a bitter, bitter pressing. Updating, police are now apparently storming the concert hall. Oh dear. People in Paris have not been permitted to just go home, but they've also been told they can't stay outside. Les Parisiens are opening their homes to people to get them off the streets. Carol Baker notes, "I lived in New York City on 9/11. I remember having 11 people, total strangers, in my tiny apartment in order to help them escape the fallout." You know, in the great conflict against global fascism, we had an element in this country generally referred to as isolationists. They were almost to down to the last individual members of the Republican Party. They weren't so sure that maybe the Germans didn't have the right idea. I'm not an isolationist, but I do try to be a good practitioner of the basic decent manners taught to me by my sainted mother, to wit, if you mind your own business, everybody else will mind theirs. And the only reason that we have any interest in that region writ large is taken up in the three letters OIL. Now, that's not necessarily the case where Israel is concerned. We have interest in Israel because the American religion industry and this country, via its Calvinist roots, fetishizes the idea of Israel. But were it not for oil, we would have no reason to give a tinker's damn about what goes on over there. And to that end, and just a different way of looking at things, to that end, if we became committed to electric cars, and futuristically fueled mass transit, you know, bullet trains, maglevs, things like that, we could, in short order, it's not energy independence that we need, I guess is what I'm trying to say. It is hydrocarbon independence. The gentle rain of heaven falleth upon the just and the unjust. And you can say that too about the sun and the wind it bloweth every day. And you know what? I'll suspect that some of the geniuses in that little broom closet in the Pentagon, where they keep the really smart one, have figured that out too. The day that we are no longer oil reliant, is the day that we become not just energy and hydrocarbon independent, but truly independent. And in that sense, and I know he's a libertarian, yada yada yada, but in that sense, a man like Elon Musk turns out to be perhaps one of the most patriotic people in this country. And arguably, one of the better humanitarians on the planet. Because he's showing a way forward, away from that. And just think about it. If, and I say if broadly, if hydrocarbons are the condensed essence of multi-million-year-old life, then to a certain extent, oil is and always has been blood. And we trade living blood for dead blood every day. Carol tells me that 28 hostages are trapped on the first floor of the concert hall, and hence the police raiding it. The French military have been mobilized. That is... unusual, to say the least. In addition to the 60 people having been killed There are dozens, scores in a different, well, maybe not scores, but dozens have been wounded. François Hollande, president of France, said, "C'est une horreur. This is a horror." And it is indeed, and what is terrifying is that the horror may be just beginning. There will be an outpouring of bloodlust in this country. And perhaps in other places. And the newly energized right wing across Europe will be screaming for blood. Who's that nasty French woman? The neo-Nazi? Yeah, somebody will put her on television, lickety-split. Let's see see what President Obama had to say about it.
Paris itself represents the timeless values of human progress. Those who think that they can terrorize the people of France or the values that they stand for are wrong. The American people draw strength.
I hate me some broadcast tones. Let's try that again.
Paris itself represents the timeless values of human progress. Those who think that they can terrorize the people of France or the values that they stand for are wrong. The American people draw strength from the French people's commitment to life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. We are reminded in this time of tragedy that the bonds of liberté and égalité and fraternité are not only values that the French people care so deeply about, but they are values that we share. And those values are going to endure far beyond any act of terrorism or the hateful vision of those who perpetrated the crimes this evening. We're going to do whatever it takes to work with the French people and with nations around the world to bring these terrorists to justice and to go after any terrorist networks that go after our people.
Round up the usual suspects, in other words. The New York Times reports there was no claim of responsibility, but Twitter erupted with celebratory messages by members and sympathizers of the Islamic State, the yada, yada, yada. Main shooting appeared to have broken out at a popular concert hall, the Bataclan, where the American band, aha, there is a nexus, the Eagles of Death Metal, was playing. And meanwhile, gosh, he was just waiting for a chance to shine, wasn't he? Jebya has chimed in early. He has declared, "It's war! I tell you, war!" Of course, Jebya has also forgotten to note who started that war. Big Brother. Literally. And it's not just it's war, according to Jebya. This is the war of our time. Hugh Hewitt apparently had Jebya on his program. And apparently Jebya said to him, "When we pulled back, we allowed the energy to form to create ISIS. Hopefully this will be a catalyst to the president to lead." Hey, you miserable little twit. No. But just, see, that's the thing. Just as in the run-up to the attack on the people of Iraq, most of this country was convinced that Saddam had something to do with September 11th, this one is taking hold as well. That somehow or another, that one, you know, the secret Kenyan Muslim usurper from Malaysia, that one let this happen or made this happen because he's such a, you know, because he's such a panty waste. He's not all butch like Ben Carson is, or Jebya, or, you know, Carly Fiorina. Because plain and simple, the only reason ISIS exists is because we attacked, without provocation, the people of Iraq. I wonder if Jebya will say that heretofore, dim leader has kept the French people safe. Okay, this is fun. Carol tells me CNN just admitted a lot of what they're reporting is bullshit because they're always wrong in the first place. Meanwhile, shut up, Jebya. And I'm sure as time goes on during the program, we'll hear more from the from the bloodthirsty right wing. Marine Le Pen. Thank you, Marty and Randy. Yeah, that's the nasty little right-wing Nazi woman in France. Steve in New York. Jeb? He's nothing but a boil on our collective ass, and I wish someone would lance that boil. Jack in Shreveport noting with regard to the Treaty of Tripoli, had the Americans working on the treaty been today's conservatives, Christian religion would be shoved in the face of the other party. The statement that the U.S. wasn't based on the Christian religion then would be extremely likely to be true. Oh, touche. So let's take a little break. If you would like to participate in Friday on the Front Porch, I heartily encourage you so to do. Send a contact request, if you never have before, on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunk. And Sparky will get you into the conversation in short order. And hopefully we'll figure something out. If you need, if you can't get into Skype for some reason, Skype's very easy to use, you can use the stress line, 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN, okay? And I haven't said anything this evening thus far, but I will say it now. We try to raise $200 every evening to keep this little network on the air. And that's what we need to raise this evening, $200. The PayPal interface at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute works. I double-checked that before airtime. So we need 20 at 10, 10 at 20, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 1250, 32 at 6 and a quarter, And of course, I add that we are trying to create a group of 400 $10 a month subscribers who will then make unnecessary any further mentions of fundraising. Our buddy Scott in Sweden, who provided the bumper stickers with which all subscribers will be provided, says, my 400 name suggestion, the core-funded 400 or the horn-funded 400? I like them both. We'll land on something, but right now we haven't even gotten to the anything 100, which... you know, that's goal one. And from one, we'll try to get to two, and from two to three, and from three to four. And, of course, if you want to take up a couple of slots in the 400 and make it $20 instead of 10, you're welcome to do that. It would be neat if we could have the 400 entirely gathered by the end of December so that we knew that we were going to go in through the rest of the year. Well, start the new year, 2016, knowing there would be no further mention of fundraising. Wouldn't that be awesome? Yes. So, again, over at headonradionetwork.com, under the tab Contribute, the PayPal interface. It's easy if you want to do the subscription thing. It's right at the very top. Pick out your amount and then click the box that says make this a recurring contribution. You can leave blank the who do you work for and where do you work and all. Leave that blank. Doesn't matter. That's a PayPal thing, not an us thing. We don't know. We don't care. We don't want to care. We don't want to know. If you prefer to use the U.S. mail, of course, you can't do the subscription model thing, you know, like that. But still, it works out. Checks and money orders made payable to the Horn to the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318. Beckley, BECKLEYWB 25801. So a bit of a musical interlude, and then Friday on the front porch, we'll get the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable fired right up. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Today. See the light of the moon on the chin should almost fill the ghost of Lawrence riding by. See the emperor run as the sabers flash, the desert tribes come with the sun behind them. At the turn of the page, see the moving finger writing new words to say. And the world goes to
reality. Just be careful how you choose your friends now. Every turn of the night of the wheel of fortune changes everything, don't lose your head now. Like a storm on the ocean, empires wax and wane and crumble away. And the world goes to reality today.
Eight minutes past the hour, I thought that fitting. Al Stewart, a live recording of The World Goes to Riyadh. You know, the stated capital of our partners in peace, the good headloppers, our friends the Saudis. And it is Friday on the front porch, and it's not just Friday on the front porch, it is Friday the 13th of November on the front porch. And with... I will offer this much by way of speculation, because I think it's interesting, at least historically. I will always believe that September 11th didn't simply happen as because that, you know, that was just the date. I think it's because that is the universal telephonic distress signal, 911. And so as such, I think it also useful to note that, yes, this is Friday the 13th. Apparently superstitious people, you know, often religious people, pay attention to things like dates and so forth. And, of course, it was Friday the 13th, Friday, October the 13th, 1307, when, on orders from King Philip IV, known as the Fair,
of France. Royal officials, soldiers, bailiffs, the like, opened sealed orders at dawn and then raided and arrested all members of the Knights Templars, including their Grand Master, Jacques de Molay. And Jacques de Molay, of course, had been a crusader who had participated in the slaughter of Muslims. Granted, they were a month off, but it would have been on October. Had Friday the 13th fallen in October, and there was no Friday the 13th in October, so this was the first opportunity, 808 years to the day, had it been in October. So it's 808 years and 1 month since a man who participated in the slaughter of Muslims was arrested and eventually executed by the French crown. Just a little something to ponder. Let's run over to the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Good evening, Sparky.
Evening, Bob.
How are you?
I'm fine. My schedule, I was going to do food porn tonight when I come on because I've got something cooking here at the end of the show.
And I think that will be that will be more than welcome. By the way, in anticipation that somehow or another we would be able to manage to finish the evening with the challenge intact, and also in the name of peace, Carol got the fundraising started this evening, so we've got $180 to go to raise this evening. But no, food porn? That's certainly better than murder porn by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, I prepped my dinner already, and all I got to do is press a button at 5:30 to start baking a turkey breast, beer and lemon steamed turkey breast with the Pappy seasoning on it.
Oh, I love that Pappy seasoning. It's good stuff.
Mm-hmm. They always come out nice and tender.
Oh, I'll bet. Of course, when turkey season lands upon us, I'm a legs and thighs and dark meat kind of guy, but a good turkey breast done well, and that's the key. Done well.
I don't have a big oven to cook a whole turkey.
Yeah.
We used to do it in a barrel, barbecue barrel.
Yeah.
Smoke them, but the barrel's kind of had its gone to its maker. It's seen better days.
Well, apparently the end has been declared to the siege at Bataclan Concert Hall. So that's.
I've been watching breaking news, and evidently they stormed it. So how many? They probably killed the terrorists and found a bunch of other people dead. But I know the band got out unharmed.
Backstage entrance, backstage exit, yeah. Well, it's going to. I mentioned blood porn a little bit ago. Just checking in over at the CNN website. There it is. Photos, night of terror in Paris. But this is my favorite. Hear gunfire outside Bataclan Theater. Well, hell, Sparky. You don't have to click a link on a CNN story from Paris to hear gunfire. You can do that in most any city and some rural areas of the United States any day of the week, can't you?
Yeah, I heard somebody banging away out way past the ranch yesterday to the north by the foothills. I have no idea. It's not dove season's over, and I don't think turkey season started yet.
Do y'all have a fall turkey season?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's only 2 weeks.
Shotguns only?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, we let the hillbillies go hunting turkeys with rifles in the spring here. You know, when everything's nice and leafy and green and, yeah. Stupid. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But in the rest, by the way, Carol Baker said she's all for food porn this evening. So you got an amen from her. She said, and regarding smoking turkey, she said, it's just so darned hard to find a rolling paper big enough to fit the sucker. Yeah, you should see what you have to do. You got to use a jumper cable for a roach clip.
Well, you know, the barrel method, you hang the turkey from a hook over the open flame, you know, with the coals.
Yeah. Oh, man,
that would be good. Put some hickory chips and stuff in there.
Ooh-wee.
Cook it real slow.
You know, there's a brand of outdoor fire-based slow cooker called the Big Green Egg. You ever seen those?
Yeah.
It's based on a traditional Japanese design, but they weigh about a ton. And the most expensive of them goes for about what, $1,500. But you know, it's the same principle you're describing.
Well, this was homemade out of a barrel.
Mhm.
And my dad put the vents on it, and on the bottom, he put a vent on the bottom, and then he got part of it is an expanded metal, and it made it into a concave thing, and it's got a big shaft comes out, and you hook it, pull it out, and that's how you put your coals in there, is when you drop it in with the hook. You burn, start the coals outside the barrel, you drop them in the barrel, then we have, we had three pieces of conduit that went through the barrel, and then you could hang your meat on hooks in there like chickens, tri-tips. It's a party cooker is what it was.
Oh, that sounds like so much fun.
But it's pretty much, the bottom's pretty much rusted out of it where the vent was and everything. And it was, the top of the barrel's the same size as a Weber kettle top.
Yeah.
My dad, you just use the top from the Weber kettle and put a thermometer in it so he could tell what the temperature was, so he could throttle the temperature with the vents.
Nice. Well, let's see. CNN reporting that police have brought out at least 100 hostages from the Bataclan club venue, music hall. And some of them did appear to be wounded, so it's apparent that at least that part of it is over.
I saw early pictures of the French firemen taking people out somewhere, and it looked like they had some of them in body bags.
Oh God!
Nothing like that to ruin your Friday, guys, huh?
Oh well, I mean, it certainly threw all of my program planning into abject chaos, Rick.
Hey, I was taking the day off today. I worked a little bit, but not too much. I'm going to a concert tonight, but my buzz has been kind of killed by this news about the terrorism in France. I hadn't turned the news on all day until I tuned in here. What a shame, you know. I mean, it's a freaking tragedy. How many gunmen had taken over the theater?
Well, see, the one report I see says police killed two attackers in terrorist assaults on Paris, at least 39 victims dead. So we don't know how many got away.
Yeah,
but the reports I see say that, you know, there were two people did that stuff in. At Bataclan.
Wow. Well, I mean, I guess it doesn't take much more than that. It takes only one lone gunman to kill about, like, what, dozens of people in Colorado in a theater, you know?
No, yes, those weapons are highly effective. I mean, they are good tools for what they're designed for, which is the elimination of human life.
Yeah. It's the sole purpose of those. And, of course, we can't ban them in this country because, you know, freedom.
Well, exactly. I mean,
although, We did ban them from 1994 to 2004, and I think our mass shootings declined dramatically during that period of time.
Yeah.
And since the automatic assault rifle ban was lifted, it's like, you know, open season on, you know, everybody again, you know?
Exactly. And, of course, even as we speak, I mean, look, we have to deal with capitalist America here. There will be, by Monday, a tremendous upsurge in purchases of weaponry general, and you know what the white wingers will be buying a bunch of? AK-47s.
Sure.
Them things appear to work real good.
Well, they're gonna fight them here, so they don't have to fight them there. Or what is the expression? I think I got that wrong intentionally there.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, yeah, they're gonna fight them. They're gonna be ready.
They're gonna fight them everywhere. Oh, geez. Well, I feel guilty talking about my concert plans tonight, so I'll hold off until it's about.
Oh no, no. I think some happiness would be more than welcome.
Okay, well, I'll share then. My son and I are going to see Collective Soul tonight at the Wiltern Theater. I don't know if you remember them from the 90s, Bob?
Yes.
Yeah, they had a lot of really great songs, hits and stuff, and should be good. It's about a 2,000-seat theater, so looking forward to that. That's actually why I am calling tonight from, I guess, to paraphrase Mike Malloy, the foothills of the San Gabriel Mountains north of Los Angeles.
Is it an outdoor venue?
No, it's actually it's a small theater. It's like about a 2,000-seat theater. I think it was built during the Art Deco architectural phase, so it's a very beautiful theater.
Oh, I've never gorgeous, actually been yeah. in there.
So,
yeah, a lot of really...
Should be a great venue to see them in. And then I'm planning on going to see a concert also tomorrow night. This one is at the Troubadour on the Sunset Strip in Hollywood. And the band is the Elvin Brothers. I think it's Dave Elvin and Phil Elvin. I don't know if you've heard of them. They do kind of like country, rockabilly kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So it should be a good show. Looking forward to having some fun tonight and tomorrow night. Hopefully my Hawkeyes will win again and become, 9-0 then? Or is it 9-0, I think? So, anyway, that's
yeah,
my
lineup. Your Hawkeyes are making it real interesting in the Big Ten right now.
They are. I mean, I'm really surprised they jumped 4 spots last week after only beating Indiana by 8 points, because they were number 9 in the big poll, and there were a few, like 3 teams ahead of them that lost, and they vaulted over those 3 teams. I guess it was Michigan State, LSU, and TCU, and they must have vaulted over one other team as well. I don't know who that was. So we'll see what happens. I have a feeling they're going to finish the regular season like 11-0, and then they'll have to win the Big Ten title game. And if they can win that, then they're probably in the Final Four, is my guess.
Yeah, but who are they going to have to play in the Big Ten title game?
Ohio State, right. Michigan State.
No, Ohio State. It'll be Ohio State.
Yeah, probably Ohio State, yeah. Well, you know, they have a really good club. They really play well, really good team football. So we'll just have to see. They've got a great offensive line as usual. They have quite a few offensive linemen in the NFL. And, I mean, that's what it takes to establish a running game, and that's sort of their bailiwick, you know?
Indeed. And, so, my hapless Mountaineers will host the Texas Longhorns in Morgantown tomorrow.
No problem, Bob. Mountaineers all the way.
you haven't been following the Mountaineers nearly long enough. I mean, okay, I'll grant you. You were right about last week.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe you'll be right tomorrow.
I think so. What are the Mountaineers this year? 4-5 or 4-4?
Oh, no. What are we? We've still got Texas, Iowa State, and I think Kansas to go. I mean, you know, we could wind up with a 7-5, 8-4, but it's not going to help because we're terrible. We're just awful. Because we won't have a winning record against it. We'll be lucky if we have a winning record against a team with a winning record.
Okay.
Meanwhile, the ex-Michigander, Ray, chimed in and said, Ohio State are little girly men.
Well, yeah, there you go.
I don't think Harbaugh is quite ready to be the anti-Pope Urban yet.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, in the chat room, I'm being reminded to remind you, Rick, your Hawkeyes have to get by Nebraska and Minnesota yet.
Yeah, they're playing Minnesota this week, and then they play Nebraska. I think they'll, you know, I think Nebraska at home's a little tough. I guess that'll be a close game. They nipped Michigan State near the end of the game last week. That was unexpected. I mean, they do have to get by Nebraska. We'll just have to see what happens. But, you know, I hope they're in the title game undefeated. They're clearly going to get to the title game because their half of the Big Ten Conference is so damn weak, you know. I don't know who thought to put Ohio State, Michigan, Michigan State, Penn State all in the same division of the Big Ten, you know.
Yeah.
Bob.
Yes, Parker.
French media is reporting as many as 100 people killed at Bataclan Theater in Paris.
I know. I've just had a couple of emails along those lines, too. So instead of what CNN reported, that 100 people were rescued, it may be 100 people dead. Yeah. I had a note from Michael in Madison, and he said, last night I saw Jason Isbell perform at the Capitol Theater in Madison. He opened the show with one of his new songs, Palmetto Rose, which is set in Charleston, South Carolina, where, as the Horn family know, this summer a homegrown American neo-Confederate terrorist gunned down 9 African-American churchgoers. My point is, music has the power to foster healing, compassion, and understanding. My heart goes out to the victims in Paris tonight, whether they were watching soccer, enjoying dinner, rocking out at a concert, or just minding their own damn business. # Paris, je t'aime. Signed, Michael. Thanks, Michael. That is a very, very dear sentiment. And Jim let me know, according to Agence France-Presse, around 100 people killed at the concert hall, Bataclan. Marty, the BBC, reporting about 100 dead at Bataclan venue. French media quote police as saying, Jesus.
I mean, guns and theaters are a really bad mix. I mean, nothing good can happen, you know, with the confluence of those two things. I mean, it's such a tight area and so packed with people, and there's just nowhere to escape, you know. My heart really goes out to all those victims, and, you know, we live in a really fucked up world, unfortunately. I don't know that there is a solution, you know.
Bob.
Yes.
Hello. This is Jenny.
Yeah. Hey, South Jenny. Yeah. Welcome.
It was not funny because it's obviously not funny, but I was in a Facebook tete-a-tete with a woman from my painting group, like plein air painters. Like I live around artists and I always think that they're really liberal. But the plein air painter people are like, there's so many like right wing Christians, which is weird, isn't it horrible?
I don't know if I could be in a group like that. Frankly.
Yeah, no, it's horrible. Yeah. Anyway, so our sheriff, you know, sheriff, Clark from Wisconsin.
Yep.
Have you ever listened to his? He has a radio show on The Blaze. It's on, like, SoundCloud on The Blaze.
Oh, no, I haven't.
Have you listened to it?
No, please, like, don't. Please, no, no.
Oh, I know. I tell all my friends, I'm like, you need to listen to it. And they're like, I don't want to. I'm like, you have to. He hates, it's horrible. Like, I need to get a job. But I just really want, like, I was thinking today, it's like, how do you recall the sheriff? Because he ran as a Democrat. Listen to the People's Sheriff, SoundCloud.com or whatever. He is insane. He hates liberals.
I don't know if I've got enough tequila around here, and it might eat all the way through the swirly straw if I try to listen to that, Jenny.
You need to. I mean, seriously, that's why I keep trying to tell people, like, this is the sheriff. Like, if I put a Bernie Sanders sticker on my car and I drive on the freeways because the sheriffs don't patrol city streets, I might be targeted. What he says about liberals, I feel like I will be targeted.
You already, I was going to say you already are, but.
Yeah, I am. I mean, anyway, but how can a sheriff say that? I mean, Sheriff Arpaio or whatever, Clark is like trumps him to the nth degree.
Does he have the prisoners wearing women's underwear on their heads?
Not yet, but I have no idea. Maybe. Anyway, to get back to the parachuting, I was talking to somebody about this, and then I was saying about how he's crazy, and she's like, and my right-wing painter friend said, have you seen what's going on in Paris? And then I wrote, I was like, yeah, you know, maybe 100 people got shot in Paris, but 20 grade school kids got blown to fucking bits. You know what I mean? 20 grade school kids got, like, shot to death. And nothing ever changes. So, do I sound terrible?
No, you don't.
Just irritates me, you know, because I'm sure she's thinking it's like, you know, influx of Muslims and blah, 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 and, you know, and, but kids get, and then I put a thing on every town research about all the school shootings, you know, like, kids get shot every day here in America. There's probably 100 people get shot every day in America.
Oh, well, and that's what makes these things particularly anguished for people who live in civilization. These these things don't happen every day in France, Germany, Belgium, Denmark, the Netherlands, the UK.
Yeah, it's very true.
You might find it interesting. I was trying to get to Agence France-Presse, and their website is apparently slammed. That or they've taken it down, because I'm not having any problems opening up any other websites, but this one is just cycling and cycling and cycling.
I mean, not to sound like I'm some sort of paranoid person or something, but going to a movie theater is not very enjoyable anymore. There's, like, no way. I mean, I never really went to movies. Like, never went to the movie theater. Never really. I like the popcorn, but, you know, after shootings at the theater, like, I don't go there anymore. And then that maybe cutting into, like, because the movie theater makes so much money, like the movie industry, those kind of things cutting into their profit, maybe that's the only way that there will ever be any kind of change.
I don't know what fixes the problem here. And of course, if if Barack Obama to say, you know, were to say to the people of France, we feel your pain, we share your anguish, because this kind of thing happens all the time in the United States when right-wing gun fanatics do it. The outrage, well, the National Rifle Association would probably mobilize an armed march on the White House. I'm not joking.
I know, exactly. That's exactly.
And the New York Times is now also repeating the report that up to 100 are dead in the Bataclan music venue alone. And dozens more in apparently coordinated attacks outside the country's main sports stadium and at least five other popular locations in the city. Witnesses on French television said the scene at the rock concert was a massacre.
But in like the 80s, there was always bombs in France. I mean, there were tons of, I mean, I'm not making any light of this, but the 80s and 90s, like in Britain, I lived in Britain and I lived in Wales in like in the early 90s. And I worked at this like store, like, you know, like a whatever, like Nordstrom's or, you know, just like a regular store. And I like was working at this coffee counter. But we were told if they tell you the time over the loudspeaker, there was a bomb in the store. And that's because there had been so many like IRA bombs that went off. So, like, if somebody came in, the time is 12:52. I was like, ah, like, you know, there's a bomb in a store. But they were used to that. I mean, and it's because of people's grievances. Does that make sense at all?
It does.
I mean, not saying, like, I don't agree with anybody blowing people up. But
these are murderers of a different stripe.
You think so?
I mean, Germany dealt with Baader-Meinhof, and you know, no one has officially said that this was an ISIS attack. ISIS hasn't officially taken credit. This could quite easily be the work of the European fascist right. I mean, remember Anders Breivik in Norway?
Yeah. Seriously, he shot like 170 people or something, wasn't it? I mean, it was crazy. But I think it all comes down to, like, I mean, with him, he was like a total psychopath, and those are sociopaths, psychopaths. They live among us all the time, but it's just like if people weren't like Northern Ireland, Southern Ireland, it's oppression. It's like this balance. It's like this balance of oppression and being oppressed, not being oppressed. And
yeah, Jenny, you're right. Violence begets violence. And when you have the powerful who are oppressing and murdering and are racist and are destroying others, it just continues on and on and on. And it just multiplies and mutates, and people, whether they're trying to defend themselves or just out and out crazy and everything in between, it seems that this world and the many humans in it are either perpetrating it, defending themselves from it, and it's just a big mess of violence, unfortunately. What do you think, Bob?
Well, first of all, hi, Alex. Three Fridays in a row. I'm tickled. That's what I think.
I didn't think you would notice. It's just that I took off the past couple of Fridays, and this is my every other Friday off day. So, and then you know what? The wonderful state of Arizona, Stan, doesn't believe in changing its clock. So we stay the same. So I get to have an hour you know, it enables me to check in with you guys. So, yeah.
Alex, so, I think you get the toaster for three appearances in a row on Fridays.
Toaster?
Yes. Of course.
I think just your wonderful words are enough.
Thanks, Alex.
So, what do you think, Bob, about this whole perpetuation of us with the you know oppression and and everything, and people from crazy people to people trying to defend themselves, and people in power, and it's just this constant, unending violence that goes on.
Well, terrorism in itself is essentially war made by people with weapons against people who are defenseless. And in that regard, it is almost always disgusting. Always disgusting. If in fact these are Muslim, these murderers are of Islamic State or Muslim back, whatever. I think we're supposed to call them Islamist. Then what scares me the most is that it will spark an absolute wild-eyed hissy in the pants-wetting American right wing. Like I said, I expect over the weekend there to be a massive run on semi-automatic assault rifles in this country.
Yep.
And I expect there to be a call, you know, maybe Donald Trump will call for the wall to be built twice as high and twice as thick. And there will, and somebody will want to bomb. And we've already seen it in the form of Jebbia out there saying, I certainly hope this finally gets our president to lead. Well, who are you going to attack? We're already bombing we announced a significant attack against Islamic State fighters last night. We had a drone attack on Jihadi John.
Yeah.
Not being a leader is just one of their talking points. Doesn't matter what we do.
Well, it's their way of calling him a shiftless Negro.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing
Hi, Jack.
I was thinking that, at the stadium place, I think the French president was there, you know, and he was, like, they got him out of there, but it was France and Germany.
Yeah, it was a friendly.
And then you got a band from America, and then you got, who knows, you know, German citizens, French citizens, American citizens, all jumbled up. But, you know, they got in three countries, and there's still supposed to be more, you know, there's more sites. I don't know what they are, but where something happened, you know. There's more than just two.
Yeah, I just look at it like I try to look at it. I kind of look at it as a symptom of an unending I don't know how to say it. It's a symptom of where we're at as far as who we are as humans on this planet, that we're doing this to each other. You know, it's just, this has been going on for forever, and it's just takes on different forms with different people. And it's, I don't know how we got to this place. You know, we could have developed into so many different ways. And done, but this is what we, you know, morphed into.
Yeah.
It's just bizarre.
What I always try to remember is that, you know, this stuff doesn't just spontaneously generate from the species. Well, I guess it does in a way, but, you know, these power-seeking, you know, sociopaths, psychopaths, want power, want land. And so there's people working to make it this way. You know, it's being done on purpose to a great extent.
And then the problem is, you know, violence begets violence. I mean, once, you know, once one group attacks others, then the other group retaliates. And, you know, before long, you know, everybody's left with, you know, one arm and leg and one eye, you know.
Paris is burning.
But imagine if Bob was right when he says, imagine if it was a right-wingers who's responsible for this, a nationalist group. And if that were true, I bet you that the U.S. would say, oh, it's a lone, crazy group. They wouldn't say terrorists.
Because exactly.
I was checking the tweets, and like, all the Republican candidates were saying, pray for Paris, they were attacked by terrorists, blah, blah, blah. But these were the same people who said, you know, after Anders Breivik did his thing, when they found out he was a right-wing nut, they were silent.
He was a mental case, you know? He was a psychopath. It was not an act of terrorism, right?
Yeah. Right. Hey, Bob. Yeah. Anytime the shooter is white, he's disturbed. Did you say something, Tim?
Yes, I said, hey.
Hey, Tim.
Hello.
Yeah, he's disturbed. But he's not a terrorist, though. I mean, you could have hundreds of right-wing conservative Christians bombing the hell out of somewhere, but they're not terrorists. They, like,
that sounds like us, Tim. There's hundreds of us bombing the shit out of everybody else all over the world. Oh, we're not terrorists, are we?
No, it's just state-sponsored terror is all that is, Alex, right? Or I guess we're protecting freedom. We're trying to bring democracy to freedom. The Middle East.
Right. You know? I'm sorry, Rick, you're right.
Yeah.
Has anybody ever seen the movie A Good Kill with Ethan Hawke?
Ooh.
No.
It's about a Nevada drone pilot and what he goes through at work and off work. How his mind gets all torn apart by what he sees on the ground.
Well, they're susceptible to PTSD as well as in-person combat. You know?
Yeah, well, they got that big... Well, it takes place at Creech Air Force Base in Nevada, where they got that facility here outside of Las Vegas.
Well, I thought I might interrupt for a minute just because... I'm always interested in little details of the bits and pieces of the Eagles of Death Metal. I've never heard of them before. Apparently, a lot of people have. Their music's been featured in video games and movies and commercials, things like that.
Death Metal, geez, so 90s.
Well, that's the thing. It's not. So I thought we would check out a little bit of their music. So stand by.
Oh, God.
That's Death Metal?
No, it's not. That's the whole point. Obviously not death metal.
I wonder they bombed them.
It sounds like the Archies on LSD.
No, what it is? I'm not as turned off by it as maybe y'all are. They were founded in 1998 in Palm Desert, California, by Josh Homme of Queens of the Stone Age and Jesse Hughes. And those are the two only permanent members of the band. And they got their name when Josh Homme said that a song by a band called Vader sounded like the Eagles of Death Metal. And so they liked the phrase, and that's what they named the band. But they described themselves as bluegrass slide guitar mixed with stripper drum beats and canned heat vocals. I can see where people would absolutely pack a house in Paris to hear these folks.
Well, and I bet you on, you know, foreigners that you're going to bomb the place, if it was even important at all who the band was, where they're from, or what it was called, you know, like death in it, they obviously don't know the fine points, you know?
By the way, Steve in New York with an email says, F the right-wingers' prayers for Paris. The right-wingers denigrate the French and New Yorkers and only give a shit when it suits their political ends.
Freedom prize. Yeah. Yep.
Jim reporting that now 118 dead or at least are being reported, according to Parisian officials. CNN putting that number out. So, but the New York Times has run with the at least 100 number.
What was the size of this venue, Bob?
Well, see, originally when I read it, when I read about it, they were saying that it was a small venue that would hold about 70 people.
Hmm.
Wow. Well, I know the deluge is going to come, and it's already coming now on the media, quote unquote. And if they don't find out, they're already talking about almost saying it that there is Islamic or, you know, ISIS, or, and then if it comes to fruition that it really is, it's going to be horrible. And you're right, it's going to be it just gives these people more leeway to be their crazy selves, you know, so I'm really frightened about that.
It's a horrible thing. Sorry about that. I was going to say, Alex, it definitely does invite the possibility of a right wing backlash, you know, to supposedly, you know, protect the republic or whatever language they use in, you know, the fascist party in France, you know?
Yeah, the Americans here don't, you know, I mean, the knuckle draggers and the racists here, you know, they would react not out of love or camaraderie for French people or even for anybody getting harmed. They would react in their usual way. You know, because it's the, you know, them that have done this, and it just gives them more fuel for their racist fire. So as far as Americans reacting, it won't have anything to do with humanity and something horrible happening. It'll just be more fuel for their fire that's already burning.
Yeah, it's basically all about any, you know, anything that helps their advance their ideology they're in favor of, or their politics, or whatever the case may be. They don't really care about, you know, dead bodies in the way, as long as, you know, they're making progress in their minds towards, you know, I guess, you know, having America become totally fascist.
Yeah.
Of course, they'll call us fascists. They'll never admit that they are. and I know we can't say the word, right? Voldemort's name cannot be mentioned, Bob.
Yeah, well, we've got a challenge to honor here.
That'll cost me $20 if I mention it.
It costs you $100.
Don't, and I'm a Jew, so I can't even do it. Okay. So I'm really frustrated.
I'll keep my mouth shut. I'll just talk about Mussolini's partner. How does that sound?
Okay, sure.
Eva Braun's lover.
There you go.
How about his other names? You know, starting with the.
Nah, I did.
Yeah, does the F word?
We must honor both the letter and the spirit of the challenge.
Damn. What will Jim do?
Can we at least say Sig Heil?
See, you let the lawyer play in the group, and he starts, you know, and he goes all W.C. Fields on you, looking for a loophole. Yeah, hey, Tim, I was going to mention something to you. Are you aware that there was a 7.0 quake off of the Ryukyu Islands today?
Yeah. So I put in Twitter and Facebook, pray for Japan.
Yeah, you posted that, Tim. I saw that.
If you don't know, the Ryukyu Islands contain Okinawa.
Yes.
7.0.
If there's any good news out of it, they said that there was no, it was not sufficient to create a tsunami.
Which is good. Hopefully, yeah, but which is good.
Oh, and by the way, I've had word from Carol, who put forth the "Don't Say It" challenge. If you want to, it costs double.
Ooh!
Just having the desire alone.
So does that mean I'm down $40, Bob?
You didn't say his name.
We're just trying to create a program where it doesn't, is that name does not get mentioned every blessed night. Yeah.
The problem is, though, the way these
we're tired of Gerald winning the pool.
See, that's the thing. We're tired of Gerald winning the pool every night. And by the way, Gerald is pouting.
So what would happen?
I got a message from Gerald right here. I don't appreciate how you folks are skirting around mentioning a certain German party leader's name. It's screwing me out of winning the nightly pool.
It's so messing up his retirement fund. Is that it?
we should all change our pictures on here to having a certain look, if you know what I mean. Wink, wink.
I can't forget you people. By the way, I predicted it, and now it has come true. I thought you guys might appreciate. There was no magic involved. Let's check in with some of the earliest breaking assholery to arise out of the attacks in Paris tonight. How about former New York Times stenographer to Richard B. Big Time Dick Cheney before he dicks you, Judith Miller. You ready for this? Somebody hockey pucks. I'm telling you.
Okay.
Meanwhile, I'm advising Carol to put on the steel-toed boots because otherwise she'll hurt her foot kicking furniture. Judith Miller,
fully pucked.
Judith Miller. Now maybe the whining adolescents at our universities can concentrate on something other than their need for safe spaces.
Oh, God. I heard some crap from Limbaugh today. I mean, it's just outrageous. I don't want to interrupt, but go ahead.
That's what the students at Howard and Mizzou were doing, is they were whining because right-wing proto-fascists were saying that they had an urge to get their murder on. If you say that you don't want to be murdered at 19 years of age by a Second Amendment freedom protector, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Christian right-winger, you know, Wolverines, you're whining. There's a phrase that the hip young kids use, and they use it sort of cross-genderly. They use it with regard to male, female. And it's really crass and it's really ugly, but I have heard it used. Where they'll say, "Oh, suck a dick." Comes to mind. So, let me see here. James Woods, once upon a time, considered to be a decent actor, tweeted, "If we can survive Obama and Kerry and Hillary until we can close our own borders, we might avoid this."
He is such a right wing
tool.
SOB James Woods. Oh.
Wait a minute. No, I've got just the thing for him. Let us check in with philosopher Jeff Spicoli, shall we? Yes, let's do.
You dick!
There we go. Don't we all feel better now? let's see. Then bringing it a little closer to home, some asshat by the name of John Cardillo said, "Do people not realize that ISIS is already infiltrating Black Lives Matter?" Here, this is fun. This is just precious. In a desperate attempt to be paid attention to, Anthrax Coulter says, "How does one say dreamers in French?"
Mm-hmm. Whoa, man Coulter, that's what I call
her. I know, because we're not going to
be... She's a man, baby!
No, we are not going to be... We are not going... Because it is not a slur to suggest that someone is transgendered.
No, I know, I'm just joking.
I know, but we're not going to...
It's right. From the Mike Myers movie.
No, I know. It's a man, baby.
A man, baby.
I've been calling her man Coulter for like 10 years, you know?
Someone named Katie McHugh... And I've heard of her before. She's loathsome somehow. Said, "End the U.S. refugee resettlement program. Strip their Middle Eastern anchor babies born in U.S. of citizenship. Deport them all."
Bye, bye, Michelle Malkin.
Yeah, how nice. How nice. Within a week of the anniversary of Kristallnacht. And then the ultimate anchor baby, Michelle Malkin, says, "Really? What could Nobel Prize-winning workplace violence whitewasher-in-chief possibly contribute at this moment?"
Well, she could deport you.
David Burge says, "No more weepy candlelight vigils. Fuck that shit." Yeah, because it would be so much more. What does he want? Fireworks? No, he wants bombs. I don't know. Progs today? Progressives today? "Betting the good people of Paris are rethinking their gun control right about now." Because, you know, that would have been really helpful there in the music venue, wouldn't it? That would have been awesome if when somebody started shooting and setting off his dynamite belt, suicide bomb belt, whatever, everybody else could have turned around and shot wildly at everybody else. That would have been great. I mean, there would have been freedom running all over the floors of that theater. Wait, they're all, you know, dear.
Maybe it's just me, but it seems like the opposite land and nuttery of comments from the right is like been turned up. You know, it's like, you know, like so opposite land that I can't believe it. So here's what I was thinking. Since everything is so outrageous, they're making their presidential candidates seem fairly sane.
Well, and that's the thing. This is all just one collective yawp of a nasty id. Let's see. Jonah Goldberg said, "I lost my bet on radical faction of up with people in the pool." Shut up. Yeah, you eat a bag of dicks, too. Ben Shapiro, "No mention by President Obama of the Islamic nature of the attacks. That would be offensive." Of course, the one thing that all of these doofi, or doofuses, fails to, is that no one has officially named anybody as the perp yet. But they already know, don't they?
It's the Islams.
Islamic.
Reminds me of Timothy McVeigh.
Let's see.
I actually think it's Obama's fault. Blame Obama.
Yeah.
Monica Crowley, jerk. And most predictably, Obama doesn't want to speculate about the attackers and their motive. Wake the bleep up. She really typed the word bleep. Hi, we're Black Lives Matter. We're just like the people being killed in Paris, except their victims were actually innocent.
What?
They never... You know, if you're a right-winger, you got to work some racism into this somewhere along the way.
Yep.
And then there's Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist, and leader, perhaps, of the civilizing people. Imagine a theater with 10 or 15 citizens with concealed carry permits. We live in an age when evil men have to be killed by good people. And, you know, if a few more good people go down and with stray bullets, ricochets, you know, happens.
On Mizzou, Limbaugh implied that the hunger strike guy was a hoax, you know? Just like Sandy Hook didn't happen.
Yeah, right.
You know, just like the poop swastika was false, was phonied up too, you know?
Yeah, and this isn't, that's their main talk radio guy. It's not some nutbag writing a book that Sandy Hook didn't happen, you know? I mean, that's, and he's saying, you know, no, didn't happen.
Jack, is Rush saying Sandy Hook didn't happen?
No, I was just comparing it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, denial of...
reality.
You know, reality. What else was... let's see. Yeah, he was talking about Mizzou, and there was some racism in there. I can't remember exactly what he said, but it's the... Democrats, you know, last stand is they're going out, you know, and of course it's really opposite, you know. It seems like the Republicans will implode, but they've got people at other campuses joining in, and then they go other things. It's like Democrats want to drive down voting because it helps them if you don't vote. I mean,
what?
Yeah, man. Yeah.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
That's nuts. Hey, Alex.
Yeah.
Did you get a new pair of earrings by chance this past week? You know, the gun earrings?
Oh, yeah, that's right. I had a go online. There's a whole site for artillery jewelry. It's incredible. I think I'm going to get a AK-47 necklace.
Maybe they have pillows that are shaped like guns, so you can kind of cradle the pillow and pretend you're holding a gun as you sleep. You know?
You know what? I vowed, you know, it's hard to approach people because you don't want to get in a fight or get killed. You know, in general, if you approach someone, if they're saying something or offending you. But I think if there's someone that looks safe enough, although you never know, Granny could be packing. I really feel like I want to say something to these people, but I'm very intimidated because these people could be carrying a gun. So I have to sit there silently and deal with all this craziness, you know?
Well, you can't reason with crazies. That's the problem, you know?
Yeah.
You've got to be ready to, like, respond to them if they do something crazy, you know?
I can't say anything or do anything about it because I don't want to risk my life. It's not worth it, you know?
It's worth it, yeah.
And that's, like, the whole thing. Like, people that, like all the shootings in Paris and the shootings in Europe earlier, shootings at school, it's not about, like, I mean, those people have, like, a certain mindset, but they're crazy people. So why are we letting this small amount of crazy people, like, just dominate our lives? I know I can go and get shot at a mall any day, or just go anywhere, because we have concealed carry. Like, I see people carrying guns all the time. Scott Walker, now we have a thing where we can carry switchblades, and, you know, everybody can carry a switchblade walking down the street. It's disgusting.
Yeah, I live in Arizona, where they walk around with guns hanging from their...
You know. That's what it's like here in Wisconsin. Wow. I, like, saw this guy. It was Culver's. It was 9 o'clock in Hartford, Wisconsin. And he had a gun. And I'm like, dude, are you... I just wanted to say next... And I thought, next time I see this person, I'm going to say, like, are you fucking Barney Fife of Culver's? Like, fucking, you know, I just wanted to demean. Mm-hmm. Like, who needs to carry a gun? I leave my door open, unlocked. Like,
well, he's obviously overcompensating, Jenny. He's trying to compensate for a deficiency somewhere else in his body.
These people aren't necessarily crazy, Jenny. These people aren't necessarily crazy or clinically crazy, and there's not a small amount of them. There are plenty of them in the United States that there's one gun for every person in this country. You know, so there's a lot of people with guns, and there's not all of them are insane.
No,
you know?
I mean, I grew up in Wisconsin. We go to my grandma's house. It's northern Wisconsin. There was always a shotgun leaning up against the wall. And I'm sure there was like a bullet or piece of shot.
Shell.
I don't know.
A shell.
A shell in there. But I never touched it. And like my grandma like used to shoot like woodpeckers because they made a mess of the thing. It was bad. We're shooting people. We're like, if I had a gun, I'd shoot a bear if it was like running after me.
Well, that's Jenny. That's the thing. There's a big, there really is a big difference.
Yeah, there's
between,
a big difference
between being in a rural setting and having the family 12 gauge.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, living in
Phoenix,
downtown Phoenix, and having 3,000 hunting rifles, shotguns, and pistols in your home.
Or just like a guy in Hartford, Wisconsin, in the middle of the country of Wisconsin, who feels like he needs to carry a gun, which the likelihood of that gun falling out of his holster, I'm more likely to be shot by him by accident than be shot by him by some sort of crime.
Well, I mean, take for instance, I mean, you mentioned Wisconsin. I think about one of my dear friends from up there whom I follow on Facebook. He rather frequently posts stuff about deer hunting, and he's a Native American, and so today there was a picture.
Friends of him too.
Yesterday there was a picture of a kill, and today there was a picture of the said deer, who had been reverently thanked, being processed into deer burger. Now maybe the hardcores among us are going ew, but it was, by my way of thinking, kind of awesome.
Yeah, and
you know what? I absolutely trust that individual with a .30-06, a .270, well, 30-30, what have you. And you know what? He never feels the need to walk around with a pistol banging against his hip. And that's the problem. You know, and a lot of that goes back to the National Republican Rifle Association's transition from a gun safety organization to a militant advocate for insurrection. Once upon a time, the NRA existed and was founded. Yeah, I mean, you know why the NRA was founded, right, Jenny?
No.
It was founded by a couple of former Union Civil War officers who had observed the fact that in many instances, the Southern soldiers, the traitors, who had been raised, you know, hunting and hunting for squirrels and deer and whatnot, were far better marksmen on the battlefield than were the Union soldier who had, say, been drafted right off the boat out of Ireland in New York City. And so they founded the National Rifle Association as a marksmanship and firearms safety organization.
Which sounds fine with me.
And it was that for a very long time. But they transformed themselves into an arm, into the firearms arm of the Republican Party. And by the time 2000 rolls around, you've got creaky old disgusting Charlton Heston standing at the Beckley Raleigh County Armory in front of a crowd of adoring weirdos screaming, "You can have my guns when you pry them from my cold dead fingers, and Al Gore's gonna get your guns, West Virginia."
You know what really makes me mad is that even in the old West towns, you had to check your guns at the city limits. So, like, you know, everybody's like, oh, you know, the Wild West and America and stuff. But you used to have to check your guns at the city limits and turn them in before you even went to town. But now we all have this, like, guns around our town. I mean, and I think that's part of, like, the NRA, like, hullabaloo. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I don't know. It makes me so mad.
Well, I've got a little bit more right-wing nastiness from Twitter, if you'd like.
Ooh, bring it on, Bob.
Ben Shapiro, who I mentioned a few minutes ago, had to work in a dig at the Palestinians, even though there's no indication Palestinians had anything to do with this attack. "This is all because of French settlements on the left bank." Get it? Left bank.
French settlements on left bank, or the Israelis taking over?
Yeah, well, no, the, right. It's,
well, this
the,
French, in that part of France. I mean, West,
the occupied Palestine, that where more and more Israeli settlements are being built. You get
He's
it.
He's referring to the West Bank, I guess, as in like the left coast, right?
Bingo. Well, and of course, La Rive Gauche, the left bank of Paris, has also historically been the place inhabited by madmen, poets, artists.
Like the Greenwich Village of Paris.
Well, well, the left bank was the left bank before Greenwich Village was even a village. But, you know, I mean, Hemingway, the expats all lived in the left bank, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you get the, yeah, it's just disgusting.
Bob, there was a story that kind of went under the radar with all the craziness with the Republicans and Kevin Swanson and all that stuff that happened the past week. Supreme Court came out with a decision which found that a police officer who shot at a fleeing suspect who was driving about 85 miles an hour, and they had to, I guess, set up a spike strip about a half a mile down the road, and he was told by his commander not to fire when he was asked if he could shoot. He went ahead and fired anyway, and he, you know, he has no liability under, I guess, what, Section 1983 for violation of civil rights. So he basically doesn't have to pay anything. And not only that, he doesn't have to, face any criminal charges. And, you know, I learned 30 years ago as a first-year law student that the police cannot shoot a fleeing suspect, generally, unless he's a danger to the officer or to other people.
Well, how many years ago?
30.
Yeah, see, that changed. And that was changed. That was changed specifically by the hand of one Sammy Bad Breath Alito. Alito meaning breath, I think. because Sammy held when he was an appellate judge that it was fine and dandy by him to blow the brains out of a young black man who was running away and trying to climb a fence and was no threat to officers whatsoever.
Hmm. That wasn't determined by the Supreme Court. That was just denied. Cert was denied, I assume.
I'm not sure what the outcome was, but
Yeah.
That philosophy is on the court now.
Yeah, it you're right. It is on the court now. And the sad thing about it is it was a per curiam opinion, which means that no single justice signed on as the author of the majority opinion. And the only dissenter was Sotomayor.
But she blistered him.
Yeah. Yeah, she did, except nowhere in any opinion is any reference to Tennessee versus Garner, which is sort of the seminal case where, you know, there was a Tennessee law that allowed law enforcement to basically shoot fleeing suspects. And that law was found to be unconstitutional. And basically, the Supreme Court found that police can only shoot a fleeing suspect if, you know, the officer's safety is at risk or if, you know, someone else's safety is at risk. And, you know, a person basically has a greater interest in not getting shot and getting killed than the government does in law enforcement in that situation. That's pretty much what the majority opinion said 30 years ago. And I mean, we have changed so much in 30 years, the jurisprudence of the country. And, you know, I hardly recognize it, Bob, you know.
And it's only going to get weirder and more twisted. Let me see. Let me take a quick peek here.
Hey, Lottie.
Lottie's in the conversation. Hasn't been around in a while. Hey, Lottie.
Hey. Good evening, everyone.
How are you?
Hey, Lottie.
Oh, a lot better. Went through a week of hell, but I'm a lot better tonight.
Yeah.
So, how's everybody there doing?
Okay, how are you?
Can I take it back to that thing that's going on in France?
Do please.
The only thing I can think of is what I thought of back in 2001 when the towers fell. Is what did they do to those people to cause them to go to that extreme? And that's what I thought here. I said, what the hell do we do to these people to cause them to go to this extreme? And the answer doesn't lie with more law. The answer lies with alleviating the problems that's causing people to do this.
I couldn't agree more. By the way, I don't know if you know this, Lottie, but I guess reports are indicating that many of the gunmen are still at large, which means that there were elements of this that were designed to let people get away, to live, to fight, to kill, to murder another day.
I fully expect this to come in waves. This is coming in waves. This isn't a single-shot deal. This is going to be a wave of attacks. And I have the sneaky feeling that this is practice for what they're going to try to do here.
Do you ever notice there's never any, very rarely any women involved in all this? Interesting sidebar.
Well, and there are reasons. Lottie, I want to take a run at that for just a second. And I agree with you. Examining causation is pretty important in this sort of a situation. Of course, that's something that is far beyond the brain power of your average wingnut. But you know what? If you have chickens roosting in your home, it is incumbent upon you to ask, why are chickens roosting in my home? By way of metaphor. And the question that I have to ask is not just why did they do this, but to try to rule out early on religion. It may be the cited reason, like, Allah doesn't like your Eagles of Death Metal there, but it doesn't hold water. Religion, even the Crusades. Just let me finish up real quick. The Crusades as a religiously motivated war. Yeah, it was called on by the Pope. It was called by the Pope, but the Pope had reasons beyond religion for calling it that had to do with trade, economics. And so, is it okay if we look at what is happening economically, what is happening demographically, what is happening in terms of human rights, because I think that's going to prove important. Go ahead, Lottie.
I was going to say religion may not be the cause of it, may have not sparked the fire, but it certainly is the fuel.
Oh, it is. I agree insofar as it is the convenient crutch by which they can say they did it.
Right. And not only that, but you can't get people to strap on bombs and do stuff like this unless you promise them something greater in the future. And religion gives them an out on that one because they're all going to die and go to heaven. So, I mean, there's not only motivation, and I mean, not only fuel, but motivation also. So, I mean, you're right. It's not the primary cause. The primary cause is social problems. When there's a large disparity between rich and poor and between different races and cultures, then you're going to have problems like this because people are going to fight back. But when you throw religion into the mix,
And, of course, that is a unique phenomenon of the last 2,000 years.
Yeah, exactly.
And it is a phenomenon that was created not by Islam, but by Christianity.
Christianity, yeah.
The roots of this lie in what was the last great philosopher in Alexandria? What was her name? Lovely movie.
I watched the movie Agora. Was the movie?
No. She was played by Rachel Weisz.
Yeah, that was the movie Agora.
Was it Agora?
Agora.
Yep.
Yeah. Agoraphobia.
No.
No, it was the movie Agora. It was. I can't think of her name. And I watched the movie. Yeah, that was the movie where they destroyed the library in the end.
I'll have it here. Yeah, it is. It's Agora. You're right. And it's her name was Hypatia.
Hypatia, that's it.
Hypatia.
And remember, the Christians went and tore her to pieces over the fact that she was not willing to go in with their fantastic blithering. It was early Christianity going through and killing people in the name of Christ in a variety of different areas that then gave the idea to the armies of Muhammad to holler Allahu Akbar as they ran into battle.
Right, but there was more to it than just killing her for that reason. I mean, they had to make a model of her. They had to show that they were going to attack the pagan in the New World, and they were going to do it hard, and she was... I mean, if I remember correctly, they flailed her.
Just like Boadicea, remember? In ancient Britain. Remember Boadicea?
Yep, they flailed her with seashells.
Boudica?
I remember correctly.
Boudica, yeah. Boudica or Boadicea, yeah. Boudica.
Yeah, but that's pre-Christian. These religion is the hook upon which they hang their bloody coat, their bloody shirt.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But these are people who are seeking some kind of power. Even if it turns out to not be Islamic, if it turns out to be right-wing fascist, it's the same principle still applies.
Yeah. It's a vehicle in which they can wreak their hatred and racism. It's just a vehicle to use. It's that's all.
And there's no solution for us. Because no matter who we help, whatever side we take, the other side is going to fight us. So, by the way,
Belgium, Carol tells me Belgium has just closed its borders.
Oh, great. And probably all of Europe's going to do it.
Well, they're so small and tiny and everybody's together there that they're freaking out, you know, I'm sure. You know, I wonder what's going to happen with all this.
I'm just wondering how long till the next incident here.
I'm shocked that hasn't happened here.
I heard they're stopping flights to Paris.
Well, how many people shot people? Like, what is the percentage of the world's population? Like, you know, are we being terrorized by 0.0001% of the world's population?
Does it really matter when they have the weapons and they're doing the destruction they are?
Yes, it does, because like the Iran fell on like 16% radicals. Tehran used to be like a huge metropolitan area. It does matter. I mean, it does. I mean, it's a small percentage, but like, I don't know. I don't know.
Until we get to the root of what's causing it, it's going to continue.
Well, we can't. How do we get to the root of what's causing it?
We know, unless
we're all just like.
Written.
I mean, I think everybody should just be nice to each other.
It doesn't work that way.
So then we have like the guy who shot up Sandy Hook. He was mentally like all these shooters are mentally insane. It's crazy people. It doesn't even have to do with religion. It's just a bunch of fucking crazy people that are insane.
Yeah, but Jenny, well, you can't necessarily say that in the present context. You can often say that in the American context because we make no effort to keep firearms out of the hands of the mentally unstable. But there are larger forces at work in something like the attacks in Paris this evening.
When I lived in Britain, the people who were attacking us, and when I lived in Wales, it was the Northern Irish. It was like, that's who I lived in fear of a bomb, is from like Northern Irish.
The IRA.
The IRA. So over. Like, I know that there's still, conflicts going on, but how did they stop? You know, it's like there has to be like, yeah, there. I guess maybe that they're.
Well,
not
they stopped. They stopped. Jenny. They were able to stop and come to some kind of a peace, which yet remains fragile.
Right. Exactly.
Because they had a common cultural core.
Well, no, I think it was a deep no. But if you were like. A Catholic and Protestant, you might be common core of just because you're like white and British or, you know, live in the Northern Sea, but they were totally opposite people. So there has to be some sort of de-escalation.
Well, and you have to want it. Okay. You have to want it. Now there's no incentive to want it. If we are talking about, for instance, if we're talking about Islamic State, they have no incentive. There's no incentive for them to do anything except fight on, because among other things, we won't sit down at the table.
Yeah, but okay,
because there's nobody to sit down at the table with. They can call themselves a state all they want, Jenny, but they are merely an agglomeration of various and sundry groups who were brought together under a broad umbrella that was created by one of the people that we put out of work
right, exactly.
when we disbanded the Iraqi military.
I totally like take all the responsibility for all that stuff because. Going into those wars and stuff was really bad. But you have to think about the people who are in charge of the Islamic State or whatever, ISIS, ISIL. Just look what they do to women. I mean, those women could, like, rise up. I mean, they can't. But I'm just saying, it's not just like this homogenous, like, oh.
We're dealing with more than one factor. We're dealing with a cultural memory, and we're dealing with cultural norms that they abide by. The way they treat women is cultural.
No,
that's
not,
very
not
hard
in,
to get out of there.
Not in like in Iran, in Tehran, in the 60s, in Afghanistan, in the 60s, women were wearing the same things they wore in America in the 60s.
But the religion that was in power then is not in power now.
And it was a tyranny of the minority that
right.
over and, these people.
And that so, minority is now in power, and it's cultural. But they also have a cultural memory. They have a cultural memory for the West. They have a cultural memory for even their own people that have a different sect of their own religion.
Right. And it's not saying like, oh, yeah, let's just empower them to overthrow their own government. But
well, I mean, look at Saddam, okay? I can remember after he was executed, I can remember when it was pretty obvious that the Iraq War was a horrible mistake, that some of the hardcores, some of the hangers-on would still say things like, well, yeah, but the world's a better place without Saddam is in it. I mean, we can all agree about that, can't we? And the answer was no, because for everything that Saddam Hussein was, the fact of the matter was he was a brutal dictator who killed his own people, tried to kill my daddy. For everything he was, for everything that he was, Jenny, he was determined to have a secular state,
exactly,
not driven by religion in Mesopotamia. And essentially what he said to Iraq is, we are going to live with each other in peace if I have to kill every one of you to do it. And it was the Mesopotamian version of Marshal Tito in what was then known as Yugoslavia. You had Bosnia and Herzegovina and Serbia and Croatia and Macedonia and all of those states that everybody hated everybody's guts. But Marshal Tito said, we're going to form a secular society here, and we're going to live in peace if I have to kill every one of you to do it. And periodically he did. And I mean, that is such a foreign notion to we, especially Americans, who like to think that we've risen above such barbaric practices. But have we really? I got to share something here. First of all, it's 23 minutes before the hour, and it looks like we're going to close the week at minus $180. It would be nice if we didn't. There are always bills to be paid, and now is no different. I need to offer up an update on the equipment fund. We have, mercifully, all the big pieces of equipment. We're going to have probably an engineering bill, and there's a possibility we're going to have to purchase a piece of brutally expensive software. So help on the equipment fund is also vitally important. But we gotta round up $180 in order not to end the week in the hole and start next Morin Monday in the hole. Secondly, I've got a lovely email here from Steve in China under the subject line psychic rubble, and I think this may help a little bit. It's true, says Steve, that the specter of terrorism has visited the United States so late in the course of common historical fact. But then our current troubles are not just those that can be recorded in the pages of any history. We are several generations removed from a world in which the profound insights of psychoanalysis, the psychic terrain, became the cliché and fodder of polite society, and our children look upon the perpetual malaise and discontent of our already failed civilization with a jaundiced and very worldly eye. But we are forever provincial, so awkward and rude compared to our European cousins. And it is the sickness of that ruined civilization that haunts us to this day, that continues to crank out all the madness and hypocrisy and terror of this rapidly dying world. Or don't you agree? Or can't you? I remember a lecture I once heard, something on the historical coincidence of psychoanalytical interpretations of individual and culture, and how this new insight had also produced, or grown out of, the transition to literary modernism. And while what the writers and artists of the moment were saying about the sources and the consequences of such a profound shift in human perspective, in consciousness itself, How one camp saw themselves as interpreters and retainers of the classical mode, while the other deemed it better to dispense with resolution and meaning altogether. Well, you end up with the likes of a James Joyce or an Ernest Hemingway, but you end up where you are one way or another, in the rubble. And you end up as well with a great war that proves to be wholly insignificant in the longer run of natural time, given all that was to come with the horrors of the next one, and the next, and the next. And so, here we are, without history, but suffocating in the dead flow of time. Another day, another new nightmare dredged up from the black labyrinth of our own private and collective nightmares. And there we are, dutifully marching off to the clean, sanitary laboratory to do our methodical autopsy upon the corpse of what remains of Western civilization. We do a great job of theorizing, you see. We are mesmerizing talkers. But like the man who hobbled together the many shards of what became the wasteland, we are truly terrible therapists. And if I understand that correctly, I think I offer up a great big honking amen. And it sort of dovetails, I think, with something I said about, you know, the inability of human beings to understand history except as something that has happened and happened to other people and in other times, rather than seeing everything as a non-linear flow. Kurt Vonnegut's birthday passed just a couple of days ago.
Yes, one of my heroes.
One of mine, yeah. Too. And, of course, he created the Tralfamadorians, who experienced time as another sense, just like taste and touch and smell. And they thought we were hilarious because we didn't understand that time could be touched or experienced in any particular order. And, of course, Billy Pilgrim in Slaughterhouse-Five experienced that and was forever changed. So, you know, Europe does continue to pay its own price. And as Lottie alluded, these are prices being paid by people with very long memories who are constantly reminded by their own national borders, such as they are, of the rubble of the Crusades. I mean, it's a fact. And thank you, by the way, thank you very kindly to Steve for that magnificent observation. And thank you to Henry for taking us down to $105 to go this evening. Thank you very much indeed. Another email coming in from our buddy Harry in Baltimore. Here in Baltimore, perhaps the polar opposite of Paris in current tourist appeal, I've had conversations with people of color who are afraid of the local police and have been intimidated for years. Yes, the NRA is a gun advocating organization that glorifies the power of the gun, and we are a culture that has always celebrated the power or right of violence. And yet the reasons underneath these social trends are sometimes counterintuitive. I'm an advocate for two different underlying causes: on the individual level, when people feel intensely intolerably shamed, and on the national level, the degree to which there is a great difference in income inequality. Harry's letter is lengthy and, as usual, brilliant. He says, one of this country's experts on violence and violent people who have been incarcerated is psychiatrist and professor of psychiatry James Gilligan, formerly of Harvard Medical School, now at NYU. Gilligan has been writing for at least two decades that one of the major provocations for violence, especially in men, is when people are or feel shamed. Gilligan and colleagues were asked to help certain Massachusetts prisons when public officials noticed a surprising amount of violence within them. He found in interviews, and later when he became head of a mental health service and was created especially for prisoners, that even most violent prisoners were ultimately provoked when they felt shamed or dissed, or whatever cultural shorthand words are part of one's cultural slang. Other male prisoners who had a more solid foundation of counter-shame factors, things they felt proud about, such as their children, family, other achievements, were less likely to go the final distance and actually commit the violence, such as killing someone whom they felt was shaming them. He successfully argued for programs in prison that would boost prisoners' self-respect and feelings of pride. In fact, until Governor Bill Weld killed the program, the Massachusetts prisons did indeed offer college courses and degrees to prisoners. But Governor Weld, responding to complaints that prisoners were being coddled, killed the program. But Gilligan's theories relating shame and violence are some of the most prominent theories of violence out there. There are one or two other criminologists who have similar theories, but Gilligan's work has been widely lauded for its attempt to get an underlying immediate cause of why an individual person will kill. I don't know what Dr. Gilligan would say about ideological causes, group religious ideologies, or cultural resentments. But he says Professors Richard Wilkinson and Kate Pickett, the two British epidemiologists who wrote The Spirit Level, found that on all 9 or 10 major social public health problems, including violence, infant mortality, incarceration rates, those countries in the OECD that had the greatest level of income inequality, the U.S., Portugal, and a few others, consistently were in the same part of each graph for each of these 9 or 10 public health problems. That is, the U.S. consistently had high levels of each of these 9 or 10 public health problems. The U.S. was in the same part of each graph, had high levels of income inequality and very high levels of these social problems. By contrast, with countries with low levels of income inequality, the Scandinavian countries, Japan, and some others, had far lower levels of all of these 9 or 10 public health problems that Wilkinson and Pickett studied. It's kind of hard to avoid a rather obvious conclusion. Harry says, warmest regards to everyone on the porch this Friday night. Thank you, Harry. Thank you very kindly. Let me do one other thing. Oh, darn it. We had a caller on the stress line, and I didn't get there. I apologize. I apologize sincerely. A note coming from Jay. There is still beauty in the world. I took my dog, Trey, out at 6 o'clock. It was just evening twilight. As I walked by a flower box near the end of the block, I noticed a hummingbird moth working the blooms. I stopped to watch and then noticed that there were two others in about a 6-foot area. I've never before seen more than one of these splendid insects at the same time. Then I glanced up and noticed the beautiful crescent moon just above the horizon. All is not death and destruction. And I think in the midst of that kind of thing, death and destruction, finding some kind of beauty, some sort of magnificence, is almost, it rises almost to the level of a human it is a positive trait and perhaps a saving grace. So I wanted to make
sure. We're doing that by being together, right, Bob?
Well, we're trying to. I mean, when we wander off into food porn, that's a manifestation of it.
Bob, I think what you're saying is that it almost rises to the level of an exigency or an urgency for people to try to find ways, try to find some goodness, or try to find something positive to look for in spite of all this stuff that we are bombarded with the news and in the society. Otherwise, there's no point in carrying on as a species.
Absolutely. In a few minutes, I'm going to get in the car, and I'm going to go across the river. I'm going to take my growler with me, and I'm going to hear a local musician who is absolutely brilliant, and I'm going to get absolutely lost in it for a little bit. And it's part and parcel of the reason that next Wednesday night I hope to have the road rig in perfect order, and we're going to broadcast and send video poetry, prose, and plain song night over at Secret Sandwich Society's The Grove, because it matters. Let me run over to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
This is Charlie. I think I called about 3 weeks ago.
I think you did, and I thought that was you.
Yeah, what I wanted to ask, maybe somebody else could have some input on this. What is the difference between these fundamentalist right-wing, quote, Christians and, these radical Islamists? I don't see much difference in them.
Well, Well, Charlie, I've often argued that they've got more in common than they know, and the only way that we've got any hope is if they never figure that out. You don't like gambling? We don't like gambling. You don't like dancing? We don't like dancing. You don't like drinking? We don't like drinking. Well, hey!
Yeah, I don't know. It just it scares the living daylights out of me because, you know, here in Nashville, there is a guy that comes on in the mornings on one of the radio stations here, and I mean, he just pours out nothing but vitriol about people of the Islamic faith, and not all people of the Islamic faith are terrorists.
No, not at all. And that's why I say that it's unfair to just say, wow, Muslim, and quit. And that's what makes the other side here in America so dangerous, because that's all they want to do. And if you say that you think that it would be important to understand motives beyond religion, then, you're just one of them sissy liberals. You ever heard that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he has a thing on his radio show where he has people riding what he calls the liberal bull, and usually it's somebody who's very illiterate that can't even hardly speak plain colloquial English, that they usually wind up saying the same thing over and over and over and over again. And it's, you know, and unfortunately, there's a lot of people like that here in Nashville.
There's unfortunately a lot of people like that all over this country, Charlie. Don't necessarily beat up Nash Vegas.
Well, I'm originally from the mountains of East Tennessee, and it was kind of a culture shock whenever I moved to Nashville.
Well, I can imagine, positive or negative.
Well, the people in the mountains of Northeast Tennessee are not quite as overbearing as they are here. I mean, it's, you know, they're more laid back. They get along with people better. There's, as a matter of fact, over in the mountains of East Tennessee, there's quite a large Cherokee Indian population over there. So the culture is a little bit different than what it is.
Well,
absolutely.
Absolutely. And historically, Charlie, isn't it true that say going back to the Civil War, the folks in East Tennessee and Northeast Tennessee, were in large part quite often sympathetic to the Union and wanted nothing to do with secession?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, they didn't. I don't reckon people in that part of Tennessee enslaved anybody. And, you know, they just wanted to live their own life and just be left alone.
And, of course, 100 years before, there was an outfit called the Washington Association, and their prime ground is now underwater. But they were the first ones to set up a notion of Republican style government within that association, and it was those same people who got righteously liquored up, marched over the mountains, and whipped the living daylights out of the British at the Battle of Kings Mountain.
Yeah.
So.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Oh no, that's okay. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that there is a strong independent streak there.
Yeah.
But by the same token, just by virtue of being in a bigger market, like a bigger media market, like the greater Nashville area, well, that means that most of the radio stations are, with the exception of, you know, a really, really good, or at least was, I haven't heard it in ages, really good AM public radio. That had a lot of excellent, curious conversation, interview programs, and such. But the for-profit media are engaged in a steel cage death match to see who can be more weirdly right wing, because for some reason or another, they figure that's the only place that there's any money to be had.
Well. I can't understand how people can have a good conscience about their life and spread the hate and vitriol that they spread. It's just, you know, they don't step back and look at what they are saying and what that does to other people whenever they say it, you know. It's just, I don't know. I couldn't live like that.
Well, and neither could I, and I think that's part of why this little community exists, you know, Charlie, and we're awful glad to have you part of it.
Well, yeah, I try to get on whenever I can. I'm still, I've got one more service call to make before I can go home, so out late tonight.
Oh, wow. So it'll be a while before you get back to the ranch?
Yeah, I've got to work on another electronic safe, and so then I'm going home.
Well, one thing. I mean, I don't envy you being out on the roads around Nashville, especially the highways at any particular hour. But if I ever complain about Nashville traffic again, all you have to do is immediately teleport me to Atlanta, and I will shut right up.
Oh yeah, I used to work for a company that did access control and fire and burglar alarm that was headquartered out on Windy Hill Road in Atlanta, and I've driven in it. I know what you're talking about.
It's terrifying.
Well, you know, I mean, one time the traffic was backed all the way up the interstate, and there was one guy in the traffic jam, and he was blowing his horn, and, you know, I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, you can't go anywhere. You can blow your horn as much as you want to, but it's a traffic jam.
Well, God Almighty, sometimes it seems like the highways around Atlanta can get, well, 75 North can get backed up all the way to Chattanooga.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that is true. But, yeah, I enjoy your program. I usually don't get to hear it live, though, because, you know, I usually tune in at a rebroadcast. I think you have a rebroadcast. It starts at 11 o'clock Central Time and
right.
Midnight Eastern Time.
Exactly. Well, we run a 24/7 stream here. I'm not sure if our rerun's running on White Rose after Malloy or not, because Ben had some computer problems.
No, I listen to Mike Malloy. That's how I really found your radio program, is I was listening to Malloy, and I just happened to leave the stream on after Malloy went off and you were there.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm totally stoked at the prospect of getting to guest host very soon for Malloy, and I just hope everything works out, and that's why we've been going crazy trying to bring in all this equipment and get everything in order. And
yeah,
it's going to be exciting.
And, you know, I mean, I see a little bit of difference between you and the Malloy program. I mean, Mike's a little bit more, you know, he's not as laid back as you are.
Well, Mike's got 20 years of broadcasting on me. So that's, you know, that's 20 years of pissed right off that I haven't worked up to.
Yeah, but variety is good, right? The more the merrier in the small amount that there is of you guys, right?
Small amount indeed,
yeah.
Alex.
We're up against it, Bob.
We are up against it. Hey, Charlie, thanks for ringing in. I appreciate it. Hope we'll talk again soon. And thanks to the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, capably and ably moderated as ever by Sparky. Thank you, Billable Rick. Thank you, Betsy. Thank you, Jenny. Thank you, Tim and Alex, and I'm sorry, I have to scroll here to get all my thank yous in. Thank you, Larry, and thank you, Lottie. Thank you to Tim and to Joan and to Henry and to Carol for making sure that we finished off fundraising to the good this weekend at the end of the week. Back for more in Monday evening, and I'm already anxious for it. This has been a wonderful conversation. Thank you very much. You two Fridays in a row, you've absolutely proven both the value and the purpose of Friday on the Front Porch. Thank you to all of you who share your precious finite time engaged in this conversation. There's no way for me to ever adequately express what an inspiration you are. Thanks to the hardest working people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and thank you to, well, Gina, always, always, always. It's all for you. Have a great weekend.